Today, state lawmakers in Missouri passed a law banning abortions at 8 weeks of pregnancy, and Republican Governor Mike Parson is expected to sign it. Missouri would join Alabama and several other states that have moved to restrict abortion rights in an effort to overturn the 1973 Supreme Court decision Roe v. Wade, which legalized abortion.
Our Friday Politics Roundtable joins us to talk about that and more. Rick Klein, political director at ABC News. Hi, Rick.
Great to be with you.
And Tolu Olorunipa, White House reporter for The Washington Post, is with us as well. Hi, Tolu.
Hi, happy Friday.
Happy Friday indeed to you, too. And let's start with the abortion politics this week. Earlier this week, Alabama's governor signed a law banning nearly all abortions with no exception for rape or incest. Several prominent Republicans, including televangelist Pat Robertson and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, said it goes too far. Rick, what's the politics here for the GOP?
It's fascinating that Republicans who have long advocated to see Roe v. Wade overturned, to see abortion limited, are almost silent and actually quite concerned that this law goes too far. And I think the concern is twofold. One is whether it's successful in overturning Roe v. Wade, this might not be the best case to do it because it is a pretty extreme position to not have any exceptions really ruled out, carved out of the law. And second, I think it recognizes that this is still precarious politics. This is not an easy issue for Republicans, despite the rallying cry they've used abortion, anti-abortion around for so long. They recognize that this could easily become a motivating issue for Democrats if,
right,
in fact, the women's right to choose is being threatened.
Tolu, does that mean this instantly became a major 2020 campaign issue?
It has definitely on the Democratic side. You've seen almost every Democratic presidential candidate put out a statement or call for new fundraising based on this issue, calling for people to donate to pro-choice groups across the country. But it's interesting that you have not heard much from the Trump campaign or President Trump himself. He likes to weigh in on almost every issue of the day, but he hasn't said anything publicly about this abortion issue. He hasn't tweeted about it. I actually asked his campaign about it earlier this week, and they deferred to the White House and did not decide to weigh in specifically on these bills that are being passed in places like Alabama and Georgia. So it is definitely inflaming some of the tensions on one side of the aisle, but it seems like the other side, the Republican side, has gone silent.
Rick, could you just go through what each of the 24 Democrats think about this?
No, yeah,
just
kidding. How long's your show?
Just kidding. Let's talk about some of the other news this week. There are new developments in the Russia investigation. Last night, a judge ordered the public release of a 2017 voicemail between former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and President Trump's personal lawyer, who wanted to get a heads up if Flynn had any damaging information about the president. Rick, is that big news?
I think it is interesting context and texture for what the report found about potential for obstruction of justice to have occurred. Of course, there was an inconclusive judgment, but it does suggest that there may have been efforts here to try to influence testimony. And I think it underscores the importance from Democrats' perspective of seeing the underlying evidence, of talking to key witnesses, including Bob Mueller himself.
Tolu, Robert Mueller knew about this voicemail, didn't he? I mean, did the report have anything to say about it?
Yeah, the Mueller report did include some excerpts from this call, this voicemail that was left by President Trump's personal lawyer. It'll be very interesting if we actually get to hear the call. But basically what Robert Mueller reported was that Trump's personal lawyer was telling Michael Flynn that he should give them a heads up if he's going to say anything that implicates the president. He even said it's a national security issue, that if you're going to implicate the president, you should let our legal team know. And he also talked about how President Trump had a fond feeling for Michael Flynn, sort of talking in positive terms about how, you know, before you decide to cooperate with investigators, remember that the president likes you and that he's a fan of yours. And then after Michael Flynn decided to cooperate, the tone changed very significantly, and President Trump's personal lawyer became very angry and, as Mueller put it, indignant towards Michael Flynn that he was cooperating with federal investigators.
Rick, what are the chances we're going to hear from Robert Mueller on Capitol Hill, as Democrats would like?
I think it's almost certain. And there's still things that still have to happen. And I wonder what the holdup has been. But the attorney general said he's open to it. The president has said he would defer to the attorney general. We don't know about Mueller himself. We know that the teams are talking. But yes, I do believe we're going to hear from Robert Mueller at some point.
And then there are also all these investigations going on into the president by the House Democrats. Here's House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on her strategy to investigate the president.
First, we ask. Then we subpoena friendly. Then we subpoena otherwise, and then we see what we get.
Tolu, where do the Democrats stand right now in all these investigations, which the White House has been stonewalling, and the idea of impeachment, which the Democrats really, it sounds like, don't want to go there because they think it'll actually help the president?
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi did not say what happens after you subpoena not so friendly and you don't get what you want. A number of Democrats do believe that impeachment is at the end of that road, and some of them are pretty fed up already. They believe they've waited long enough. They've been patient enough with the president and with his administration as they've stonewalled and as they've rejected these various document requests. And some are ready to go fully towards impeachment. Others are calling for lawsuits and fines for Trump administration officials. But it's clear that the Democrats in Congress are fed up with the fact that the president's administration does not believe that it has to respond to their requests, and they're looking for different ways to try to put pressure on the Trump administration. It's sort of a maximum pressure campaign, if you will, where they're trying to make sure that the Trump administration and President Trump's allies all feel pressure to cooperate with their investigations, and if not, impeachment may be at the end of the road.
Rick, the president said this week that he hopes the United States is not going to war with Iran. There have been a lot of stories this week as well about the hardliners inside the White House, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, who are getting ahead of the president on this issue. What Iran policy do you think the president actually wants?
Oh, he wants to undo the nuclear deal, and he's already made that clear. And I think a lot of this is not just the pressure from inside his administration. It's also from Israel, which has advocated for a long time with the Netanyahu government, a very strong hard line against Iran. I tend to think he is speaking honestly when he says he hopes there isn't a war. Of course, he has something to say or do with that. I think this is going to be a critical couple of days, though, because we haven't seen the intelligence that these machinations are based on. And it has a lot of echoes of Iraq 2003 for people that are looking from the outside. What do they have? What is the urgency here, and what are the consequences of the information that we're gathering?
That's even frustrating his allies on Capitol Hill in Congress, who say, let us see some of this intelligence. We're in the dark here.
Well, and in fact, we spoke with the House chairman of the Armed Services Committee yesterday, who said he has been briefed by the Pentagon, and he doesn't see any increase in the threat over what's existed from Iran for many years. Rick.
Yeah, and I think that's a concern that so many of his friends and allies and even in political enemies have. Is what are we doing here exactly? And you're not seeing other countries react accordingly with this sort of intelligence. So what are they seeing? I think there's going to be efforts to declassify some things in the coming days, and I think that's going to be critical for the outcome.
Let's take a couple of minutes just to talk about 2020. We won't go through every single one of the candidates, but the newest one is New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who entered the race for president this week, criticizing President Trump and supporting the Green New Deal from progressives, the climate change agenda. And on ABC's The View, host Whoopi Goldberg scoffed.
Not a good career move, man. Here's the thing that you didn't mention. Homelessness is near record highs. Congestion pricing. We'll take the minimum wage money that we just gave to people. It'll take it away from them.
So some of the New York City politics there. Tolu, de Blasio, your thoughts?
Yeah, and then there were 23 candidates on the Democratic side running for president. De Blasio, the latest to jump in. A number of New Yorkers are not happy that he's getting in, citing some of the problems that he continues to face in the city of New York. But he is saying, you know, I am an executive in one of the biggest cities in the world, and I have a record of pushing forward progressive policies, anything from free pre-K to $15 minimum wage to making sure people have health care, and he wants to take that national. So he does have a record to run on, and Donald Trump won in 2016, and I think a number of Democrats think if Trump could do it, why not me?
But Rick, why do you think there are candidates that are still getting into this race? Do they seriously think that they have a chance of differentiating themselves and winning at this point? It seems sort of ridiculous.
I don't know how you look yourself in the mirror and say there aren't enough candidates. I do think there's a number of these candidates like de Blasio or term limited or otherwise blocked politically that say, hey, why not me? And maybe you get yourself some name recognition. Maybe you catch fire. I've heard a number of candidates talk about the Mayor Pete phenomena as a reason to stay in or to get in. Hey, who knew that Pete Buttigieg would be a big deal 2 months ago? And of course, he's now, I think, considered a top-tier contender.
Well, and let's listen to one more clip from one of the candidates this week, Kamala Harris, saying Joe Biden would make a good vice presidential pick. Here she is.
Sure, if people want to speculate about running mates, I encourage that because I think that Joe Biden would be a great running mate. As vice president, he's proven that he knows how to do the job.
Tolu, as you listen to that, I mean, all these candidates are now having to measure up against Joe Biden, who's clearly the front runner at this moment.
Yeah, they are battling the idea that Joe Biden is presenting himself as the presumptive nominee to go against Donald Trump at this point. And it's a delicate balance because they don't want to attack Joe Biden, who was served as the vice president to a popular Democratic president and President Obama for 8 years. So they were trying to figure out how to take on Joe Biden. You've seen some like Bernie Sanders go very directly against his record. Some have been a little bit more delicate and pushing back against him, like we saw from Senator Harris there. But Biden right now is at the top of the pack with all the polling, and it's clear that the rest of the field is trying to catch up.
Rick, I don't have time to ask you about Beto O'Rourke's live-streamed haircut talking about ear hair. That's where this has gone. Rick Klein, political director at ABC News, and Tolu Olorunupa, White House reporter at The Washington Post. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.